So after one of the craziest months of my entire life, I am back on the mic and I'm going to give you an update as to everything that happened in the month of April as far as Nifty business, my life, where I've been, and how crypto saved me in Africa. Hello, I'm Taj, digitally known as Tropic Vibes, the host of Nifty Business, where we highlight NFTs and explore Web 3.0 as we move from pure speculation to creating real-world value. So if you haven't noticed, I have been off the mic for quite a while. I have been recording like crazy. However, I wasn't able to edit, upload, do all of these crazy things. And if you notice, I've even had a little bit of a hiatus on X. I just got back into the stream of things. And I was posting some things during NFT NYC. That was in the beginning of April. But then I went silent. Well, over the last month, I've been on 3 different continents, 4 countries, spent 40 hours in the air, 15 hours or so taking buses, and countless hours driving in cars all over the place. It all started back on April 27th when I left Jamaica to go to the conference for NFT NYC. Now, if you are familiar with the show and familiar with me, I grew up in New York, so I have a lot of friends, family, and colleagues in New York. So I wanted to go a few days early because I knew that I had to ship out immediately after the conference because I had to go to Africa on a missions trip directly after the conference. So that flight was leaving from Dulles Airport in Virginia. The conference ended on April 5th. Therefore, I went to New York a few days early to meet with my aunt, family, friends, and so forth before the conference because I just knew I did not have enough time. And last time I was in New York, trying to rush around to see everyone, I ended up getting a speeding ticket, which was just a complete nightmare. This time around, I knew that I wanted to see everyone, get things out of the way, if you will, before the conference. I didn't have to rush and there would be no panic. I get up there. April 27th, by the way, on my way out the door, I left my cup of coffee on the counter. That sat there for an entire month. Very interesting what happens to coffee that sits down for an entire month. Luckily, it was black coffee. However, once I sipped it, so if those of you that are into science and so forth, it happens when you sip a cup, you put it down for a while. Anywho, back to the story at hand. I get to New York April 27th, end up seeing some friends, hanging out. Of course, the person I stayed with was my brother from another mother that got me into crypto. So that was really cool to be able to stay with him, give him all the updates, crash course, and just highlight him on everything that's happening in my life, how I came to work on various teams, I'm in Discords, how I became a speaker, all these things. I got to catch him up to speed and then also onboard him onto one of these cool tokens that I've been playing with and I have high hopes for. So I was able to gift him some ND or Nemesis Downfall tokens, which is related to a game that's coming out on the BNB ecosystem, which was just really cool to be able to catch him up to speed with that and say, hey, this is what I'm looking at. This is what I'm working on. And after that, now I went to the conference. Now I'm going to do a separate episode just speaking about the different things that happened at the conference and my review of that, although it is overdue. And of course, I have some recordings, some interviews that I did. It was pretty interesting. So I'm going to do that in a separate thing. But overall, I'm just going to say NFT NYC was a very positive experience for me, even though it started off very rough. The same brother that I was staying with ended up in the hospital with an irregular heartbeat. So I wasn't able to go to the speaker's dinner, but when I weigh things in hand, there'll be many opportunities to go to speaker's dinners, rub elbows and so forth. But this is someone who is irreplaceable. Whatever. I missed the dinner and I was hanging out with him until like midnight, whatever, at the hospital. And it turns out that it was just stress. Those of you that are listening, stress is a very serious thing, especially with these roller coaster rides of prices going up and down. It might be triggering someone's anxiety and all these different things. Just know that stress can put you in the hospital, give you some symptoms that looks like a heart attack, but it just turns out to be a panic attack. With that said, I was able to show up for the conference day one as far as the events wherein the public comes in. So I missed the speaker's dinner and I go to that and it started off pretty slow. I won't lie. However, it was, again, as I said, a very positive experience. So the 3 days went by fairly fast. And those of you that know, I'm an introvert. I saved up my energy, if you will, for this particular thing, even though I was on a Spaces tour leading up to it. So I was doing a whole lot of talking, but I just wasn't going out in public. So those of you that know what it's like to have a social battery and just going out into crowds and so forth will totally understand where I'm coming from with this. So I just plan to spend everything I had at the conference. Now, as far as going to various side events and whatnot, I just saw the benefit in staying at the main conference, and the people that I really want to speak to were right there. So that's where I spent most of my time. So after the conference, now I ended up crashing. However, that wasn't the end of my journey. It was really just the beginning of my journey. So I ended up taking a bus down to Virginia where I would spend a couple days with my brother down there. I ended up going to church with the group that I was heading over to Africa with. And at this point, I was really starting to feel the fatigue. But guess what? I had a 20-hour flight ahead of me. Not 20 hours directly, because I think it was 7.5 hours from Dulles to London. Then I had to connect after a 12-hour layover because they wanted to tour out London. So we just hung out in the airport while they toured out the city. And then we flew to Johannesburg, which was another, I think, 11 or 12 hours. So that was like 19 hours in total in the air. But then there was the layover. And then after that, we had a 4.5-hour bus ride, I guess it was, from Johannesburg into Swaziland, where we were actually staying. So this is where things start to get really interesting. Now, mind you, this whole trip I had budgeted out, and I know I'm looking at various funds and side gigs and everything that's going to come in, and I'm trying to time everything. And I said, okay, cool. Everything is good. Everything's paid for upfront as far as the plane tickets. And that was really the most expensive part of this entire month escapade, if you will. So basically, it was just entertainment and food and all these different things that would be there. And I just knew that once I got to Africa, things would be a lot cheaper. However, all that running around I did in New York kind of racked up the bill a lot more than I ever anticipated. So I burned through money a lot faster than I had planned to. So by the time I got to Africa, believe it or not, I only had about $100 in cash, physical cash, which I thought I could change out, which is another story in itself. And then I had probably, I don't know, like $60-$70 on my debit card. So those of you that are paying attention is like, wow, why would you go all the way across the world with that little amount? I knew everything was already paid for and all I needed was a little bit of spending money. I heard about the prices and everything over there. So all was well. So first day, we go to the grocery store. Absolutely amazing. The amount of food that I purchased with, I think it was like $27 worth of food, was just ridiculous. If I could purchase that in Jamaica, if I could purchase that in the States for $27, it would just been mind blowing, because Africa is a massive continent. Everything is made right there. Lots of resources. South Africa is very industrialized. They have just everything that is there. So on the continent, it's fairly easy to buy things at a reasonable price and they're of great quality. So as the week went on, we're doing various things and just constant expenses keep coming up. The group that I was with always found themselves, rather than buying local things, want to experience what they're used to everywhere they go in the world. And in particular, I'm going to say Westerners, especially if you are from the States. I noticed a lot of people even come to Jamaica, wherever it is, they stay at these all-inclusive resorts and they tend to have a very Americanized experience, which I think is ridiculous. Why am I going to go halfway across the world to a different country to experience the same exact thing that I'm used to at home? So a lot of the food places that we're going to and the various things, really wasn't the local experience. However, it was pretty cool that the people that were over there, they did cook and we got to experience some of the local things. But when my wife and I ventured off and we started to pick up various things in places, like, wow, the amount of food we can actually buy at these restaurants with $5 worth of the local currency, either in Rand or Emalani. Rand is South Africa. Emalani is Swaziland's native currency, or I should say Eswatini, because the king changed the name from Swaziland to Eswatini, but most of the people still say Swaziland. And even when I'm filling out custom forms, the drop down menu still says Swaziland, but that is another topic in itself. Anywho, so just as a world traveler, if you come to the Caribbean or anywhere, just experience like the local experience rather than trying to go with the familiar places, the franchises, the global brands and so forth. You're going to save a lot of money. It's going to be better. And you get to really experience that culture. But going back to this whole story, burning through money. And now I realize, okay, the cash that I couldn't change out, headache, because I didn't have all the documents that I needed necessarily to go to the cambio or the exchange place. So I ended up just selling it to someone that was in the group. They said, okay, cool. I'll just withdraw the money. And when I get back to the States, I could use that. So I'll take the cash from you and I'll just withdraw it. Okay, cool. That was one issue there. So $100 later, which was about $1,900 worth of the local currency, is a lot. You can do a lot. However, when I went to the craft market, there was so many things that I wanted. And of course, starting off the conversation saying, hey, I'm here from Jamaica, it just gave me the local discount, if you will, because people were just blown away by the fact that Jamaica is so well known, yet it is like the very, very, very small. They couldn't believe that Swaziland, which in their mind is this little dot on the map, is way bigger than Jamaica, because Jamaicans are everywhere. Granted, we have 3 times more people living in Jamaica than they do in Swaziland. But on a global stage, of course, Bob Marley and all these Usain Bolts and all these people are so well known. So the brand of Jamaica is way bigger than the actual island or the population. So everyone is blown away by that. Thought it was cool that I came from Jamaica. By the way, Bob Marley music was everywhere. Even coming from the airport on our way there on the bus ride, we were hearing Bob Marley. So that is another thing. But because of that love for Jamaica, they're like, okay, well, we're all one. We'll give you the local prices. So I'm getting all these local prices at the craft market. So that is how I ended up blowing $100 very quickly. And I won't say blow because I got some really cool things. So now I'm just down to a few dollars that was left on my debit card. So now at this point, I'm like, okay, I'm going to run out of cash because the people that were supposed to pay me for various things, they haven't deposited the cash as yet. But luckily, I had crypto. So what I ended up doing at the worst possible time ever, because there was that flash crash when the conflict started up in the Middle East, of course, as usual. But it was during that dip, I had to sell some of my crypto to convert it out. So if it wasn't for crypto, I would have ran out of money on a foreign continent, thousands of miles away from home. But luckily, what I ended up doing is just swapping out some random currencies, get some Litecoin, sent it over to PayPal, converted it at PayPal, and then sent it to my debit card, which I was able to use locally and withdraw some of the cash. And of course, for the most part, you can use your debit card in most places, but I still wanted some hard physical cash on hand just in case I wanted to buy some roast corn on the side of the road or if I want to go into the craft market again, which I ended up doing. So if it wasn't for that, I would have been in some serious trouble. So here's the thing. A lot of the times we like to say death with banks, death with centralized exchanges and all these different things. But here's the thing. We live in a world right now where there is a need for an intermediary. Gasp, I know. People listening to this might say, doesn't sound like you're a Web3 guy. But here's the thing. The vast majority of places that we go to in the world, they're going to interact in fiat currencies. And even if they take debit cards and so forth, somehow you're going to have to get back and forth. There has to be a bridge or an intermediary from your crypto, because when there's dips, I want to sell my services and get paid in crypto, because when there is a pump or a run up, guess what? It's like I got paid more. So that is beautiful. However, when it comes to spending on food and various things, usually there is a need to go back into fiat in some way. Now, if you're in some countries, you have a debit card that can go easily from crypto into cash, that's great. But the vast majority of people around the world do not have that opportunity. So there's all these different steps and things that you have to do to finagle your way around the system to have one foot in the quote unquote physical world with dollars and euros and rands, emilani, whatever you want to say, whichever country you're in. And then you have your crypto with your ETH, your Bitcoin, your meme coins and so forth. So one thing I will say that I learned and really got to appreciate firsthand experience being on this trip is that number one, it is absolutely amazing to get paid in crypto and enjoy the ups and downs. But at the same time, depending where you are, it could be an issue to actually shift out. Now, most people aren't going to travel how I traveled one whole month, knowing that I'm doing a balancing act with funds and all these different things. Most people aren't going to do that. However, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you're traveling internationally and you're looking at crypto as a reserve, a few things to keep in mind, which I also learned on this trip. Number one, not every exchange can work in every jurisdiction. Now, I knew that beforehand, but it's not until you actually have funds on one exchange that you can't access in the US or North America or vice versa that you actually come to appreciate this. Now, there's workarounds, there's VPNs and so forth, but if you ever log into some of these platforms without using the VPN after consistently doing that, they might lock down that particular account. Now, you don't want your funds to be locked on a centralized exchange that was locked down because you're not supposed to be using it in certain jurisdictions because you forgot to use your VPN. So I'm not even going to recommend to try to finagle your way around that. But being someone who lives outside of the US and then also has a lot of ties and I go back to the US and so forth, I use multiple exchanges. Some of them only work inside the States. Some of them do not work inside the States. And depending where you are, it's going to be different for you too. So during this whole thing, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? Am I going to sell off some NFTs? Am I going to do this? I'm going to use the VPN, all of these different things. Luckily, had access to internet most places I went. I was able to do these swaps on the fly as I needed it. So it was pretty cool. With the exception of when we went to the game reserve, we went on this like really cool safari and everything, and there was like no electricity at the place. Everything was like propane, water heaters, and kerosene lamps and all that stuff, which was really cool. Great experience. Saw some lions and rhinos and all these different things. But with the exception of there, I had internet access and electricity and all that stuff. Now, a lot of the misconceptions that like there's lions and no electricity and all that stuff running around in Africa. First of all, Africa is a massive continent. Multiple United States, right, could fit inside of Africa because there's like something like 60 countries there and everything. Everywhere is not the same. And even the places that you think would be so poor and run down, no, they're connected. They have internet access. They have electricity. They have all these amenities and so forth. And they are ripe and open for crypto, Web3, and all of that stuff. So I think it's absolutely amazing. And in many of these countries, actually, it is much easier for Web3 adoption. And anyone that's building right now, I will definitely say one of the biggest opportunities that's in the space. Even a couple of days ago, I was on a space with a team. I think they're called Algo or Algo. And one of the things I said, look at the Caribbean, look at Africa and all of these different places, because what you're trying to do, rather than competing with the legacy infrastructure and going on an all-out war with traditional finance, it makes more sense to just go to the blue oceans, into the opportunities where people are unbanked and they need various services. And it is so much easier to do it than using the traditional way, just use crypto and bridge it to them so that they can then withdraw at ATMs and do whatever it has to do to run their lives. That is a much better path, much more profitable than it is to go have an all-out war with the big banks. So with all that said, here's where I'm going to land the plane. 1 month on the road, all that traveling, and of course, I left out the back end of the trip when I flew back stateside, have to connect, of course, before coming to Jamaica. I spent about a week in Florida with my mother before returning home. But even there, what kept this trip rolling was the ability to go from crypto to dollars. So I have a whole bunch of content to roll out because, as I said, I've been recording, doing all sorts of things while on the road, just haven't been editing and uploading. So you're going to see multiple episodes come out within the next couple days, and I'm just going to dump everything out there. A lot of this stuff is overdue, but it is. I think it's still valuable information. I'm going to share that, get it out there. And I would love to know if you have any kind of experience traveling around using crypto, bridging traditional finance with your digital assets and so forth, and just being able to survive in the real world. I would love to hear your experience with that, especially if it's like a crazy thing like what I just did, going to a different continent with less than $200 cash on hand. Please feel free to share that with me at Tropic Vibes on X. But as usual, I want to thank you for taking time to listen to this as we're learning and building Web3 together. So until next time, later.
The Nifty Business Arrow is not investment advice. It provides insights and information within the space. As with anything, please do your own research before making a decision whether you're making an investment or a purchase.